Okay, today's daf is Vav Basra daf Mem Aleph. We left off in the middle of daf Mem Amid Beis. We didn't get done with the daf yesterday, so we're at the two dots. Says the Gemara, Am Rav Yehuda, Hay Matanta Tamirta Lo Magvinim Ba. If a person gives a secret shtar matana, so that secret shtar matana you can't collect with. If a guy comes to court with a shtar matana that was written secretly, he can't collect the matana. So the Rashbam explains, why not? Because it's suspicious. Why would you give a matana in secret and not give it publicly? So the Rashbam writes, Shema Nasan Liachar Kavar. Maybe what you did is you gave it to somebody else first, and now you're giving it to this guy as a secretive type of deal. Or maybe what you're trying to do is you're going to give it as you're going to sell this land or give it as a matana to somebody else, and you want to preempt that future sale or that future gift by giving this matana in advance, so you're only using it in order to invalidate someone and to be able to cheat somebody out of a matana that you're going to appear to be giving them later on. So we say that this matanta tamirta, a secret shtar matana, you can't collect with. So it says Gemara, Hechi dami matanta tamirta. What exactly constitutes a secret shtar matana? Amar Rav Yosef, da amalu l'sadu zilu atmuru v'kisvulei. Rav Yosef says it has to be where you instructed the Edim that when you write the shtar, I want you to hide. I want you to write the shtar in secrecy. If you don't instruct them to write it in secrecy, then it's just a regular shtar matana. V'ikada amri amar Rav Yosef, but there's another version of Rav Yosef. It's not that you specifically instructed them to write it secretly, you just never told them to write it publicly. Normally, a matana is something you want to scream from the rooftops that you're so generous, you're giving this matana, and you should instruct the Edim specifically that it should be done in a very public fashion. And if you don't tell them that it should be done in a public fashion, mimeila it's understood that it's supposed to be done secretly, and then it's going to be problematic. So, my benayu, what's the nafkamina between the two versions of Rav Yosef? So the nafkamina is obvious. Stama. What if you just tell them write a shtar matana? You didn't give any special instructions. You didn't tell them to write it secretly, nor did you tell them to write it publicly. So according to the first version, anything that isn't that any time you did not specifically instruct them to write it secretly, it's not called a shtar matanta. It's not called a matanta tamirta. But according to the second version of Rav Yosef, it's called a matanta tamirta so long as you didn't specify that you want it done in a very public way. So good, so that's the nafkamina. Amar Rava v'havia moda al chavrta, but Rava adds a chiddush about this matanta tamirta, that even though it's invalid in terms of a shtar matana, so if you write a matanta tamirta to Reuven, Reuven cannot come with that matanta tamirta and claim the property or the money that's written in it. He's not going to be entitled to the property in that shtar matana. However, Rava says, it does serve as an effective moda'a l'chavrita. If you were to then go and give that same land as a matana to somebody else, or sell that same land to somebody else, this matanta tamirta can preempt that future transaction and say that future transaction is invalid. The second transaction is invalid. So if after writing matanta tamirta to Reuven, you then go and give him public matana to Shimon, the same land, Shimon doesn't get it either. Reuven doesn't get it because it was a matanta tamirta was invalid. Rava says Shimon's not going to get it either because the matanta tamirta written to Reuven preempts the matana given to Shimon, and therefore the matanta to Shimon is invalid. Amar Rav Papa, so Rav Papa just points out, Had the Rava lav beferish itmar el mechlali itmar. It's very important to know sometimes whether a posek said something as a direct psak, as a direct statement, or whether we're just deducing what the psak is based on what we see going on, based on how we see he dealt with a specific case. Because sometimes we may have misunderstood the person's behavior. It's like the famous story they tell about Rav Moshe, that there were two bottles of orange juice on the table of two different brands, and he picked up one and he put it down. And then he picked up another one. So everyone said, oh, Rav Moshe holds that company that is it's not kosher orange juice or something. And it was just empty. It was just an empty bottle. Sometimes there's another explanation for the behavior of the individual. So we're saying that Rava never issued a direct psak that a matanta tamirta is a moda al chavrata. No, based on a din Torah that came in front of him, we were able to deduce that that's what he held, or we thought we could deduce that that's what he held. How were we able to deduce it? What was the story? There was a guy that was going to be Mekadesh, a woman, right? He wanted to marry a woman. Amr Lay, and the woman was playing hardball, so she said, she wanted to test his commitment. So she said, look, if you give me all of your money, then I'll agree to marry you. If you don't give me all of your money, then I'm not interested. I want you to write a shtar that you're giving me as a matana every last dime that you own, and then I'll be happy to marry you. He then wrote her a shtar that said that all of his nechasim now belong to her, but prior to having actually written the shtar, it doesn't say this in the Gemara that it was prior, but it has to be prior, Asa Berei Kashisha, his oldest son came, Amar Leva, Hu Gavra Matahave Alei. You're basically writing me out of a Yerusha. How could you do this? What are you going to do to me? If you write a Shtar Matana, then everything is going to go to this new wife of yours. What's going to be left for your children? We're all going to be left with nothing. So Amar Lehu L'Sadi Zilu Atmuru Be'Ever Yamina V'Kasvulei. So he told witnesses, go hide somewhere and write a Matanta Tmirta to my oldest son. And that way, he'll be left with something for Yerusha. So, meaning, writing the Matanta Tmirta for the eldest son, it's clear that it's not going to work for the son, right? It's going to be put because it's Matanta Tmirta. The question is that going to stop it from working for the woman? Is that going to stop the subsequent transaction where you're going to write a Shtar Matana for the woman in a public way? Is the previous Matanta Tmirta going to stop it? So, Asul Kamed Rava, they came to Rava for a Psak, and Amalahu, Lomar Kana, Velomar Kana. And Rava said that nobody was Kana. Nobody acquires it with this. So, Rashbam points out, Haben Mishum Davia Tamirta, the son doesn't acquire it because it's a Matanta Tamirta, because the Matanta Tamirta is enough to serve as a Moda'a, and that's exactly what it does. It serves as an effective Moda'a in this case. Man dechaza, so the person who saw that Rava passed in this way, savor mishum da havya modal lechavrita, figured that Rava definitely kept it out of the woman's hands because he holds that a matanta tmirta always serves as a valid modal. But velohi, that's why it's important to know the context within which Rava said it, because it's not true. Rava doesn't hold that it's always a valid modal. Hasamucha milsa de machmasonsuhu de kasavla. Over there was evident that he was not interested in giving the woman all this money. She had forced his hand. So it was only an onus that he was giving her all the money. Avalhacha, mar nichale de lukni, mar lo nichale de lukni. But in a typical case where I write a matanta tmirta to Reuven, and then I write a matanta gemura to Shimon, so probably the reason I gave it as a matanta tmirta to Reuven is because I didn't want Reuven to have it. Who did I want to have it? I wanted Shimon to have it. So that's why I wrote it as a full-fledged matana to Shimon. But in this case, it's different because we know he didn't want to give it to the woman. The woman was forcing him to give it to her. So since it was, we know it was bonus, that's why Rava said that in that case, we can assume the umdana, that the das of the person who was giving it, the das of this husband, was that he was not interested to give Belev Shalem to the woman. But in a normal case, we can assume that he wants to give it to whoever he writes the full-fledged Shtar Matana to. Now, in order for this to work, you have to say that there was no explicit Tanai over here, meaning if the woman actually made it as a Tanai of the Kiddushin, that the Kiddushin was now Al Tanai, that she gets the money, well, if she doesn't get the money, they're not married yet either. So it must have been that it wasn't a Tanai, right? That she was just saying, look, if you show me the good faith of writing me Shtar Matana, then I'll marry you without any Tanai, right? That must have been what occurred in order for the marriage to have worked. So anyway, we had discussed what exactly Matanta Tmirta is, what the definition of Matanta Tmirta is, but we never came to a Psak Halacha of what the definition of Matanta Tmirta is. Again, the two versions of Rav Yosef. Either Matanta Tmirta is only when you explicitly tell the person that you want it done secretly, or even as long as you didn't say explicitly that you want it done publicly, it would be Matanta Tmirta. So Ibayiluhu, Stamamai, what's the Halacha now? Meaning, that's the Pashtus, that we're going back to the previous discussion about what the definition of Matanta Tmirta is, and we're asking, no, what are we paskin? That's the Pasha Pshat. The Rashbam has a different Pshat as well. First he quotes that Pshat, and then in the fourth line of Rashbam on the page, he says, V'yesh mefarshin da'amo da'a kai. To kim lo havi matanta tmirta moda'a l'chavirta, aval stama mi havya moda'a. Some say that the question is on Rava's additional chiddush, that if we're going to assume that a matanta tmirta is. I mean, Rav had said that it serves as. We thought Rav had said it serves as modal l'chaverta, but we just disproved that. And we just showed that Rav had never said that it serves as a modal l'chaverta. So we say a regular matanta tmirta does not serve as a modal l'chaverta. Will not invalidate a future transaction. Fine, that's by regular matanta tmirta. But stama mi havya modaa. What if you write a stam? Assuming now that a stam is a matanta tmirta, it's just that you never explicitly told the guy to do it secretly, is that considered a modal l'chavrita now? Because you never said to do it secretly, maybe it makes it strong enough to nullify any future transaction. But says Rosh Ram, v'lo nihi reklal, d'lalhu lishan dami stama psula, vadi lo havi modaa, d'ayna tmirta. Meaning, if you hold that when you write it, if you hold that writing it stam, according to the lashon, that writing it stam is kosher. So then, what are you talking about? There's no issue of whether it's moda'a. The first matana was valid. If you hold that it's invalid, that it's called a matanta tmirta when you say stam, so then it has all the halachos of matanta tmirta. Why should it have some halachos of matanta tmirta and not others? It would have all the halachos of matanta tmirta, namely that it's not a valid matana, plus it doesn't serve to invalidate. Future matanos doesn't serve to invalidate future transactions. It would be just like any other matanta tmirta. Now, the Yesh Mefarshin would hold that no, although it has the status of matanta tmirta mine ubei in terms of what it's able to accomplish itself, it is a little bit stronger than explicitly telling a person that you want something done secretly. So maybe since it's a little bit strong because you never explicitly told them you want it done secretly, so maybe that should be enough to invalidate future matanos. But anyway, the Rashbam rejects that interpretation of what the Gemara is asking. So let's go back with the simple pshat. That stam amai, what are we asking? Simply, what's the definition of matanta tmirta? That the first version of Rav Yosef says matanta tmirta is only when you explicitly request that it be done secretively. And the second version of Rav Yosef, matanta tmirta is even if you never explicitly request it be done secretively, even if you just don't say that it should be done publicly, that's a matanta tmirta. So Ravina amar lo cheshinan. Ravina says, we're not choshesh, meaning it's not a matanta tmirta. It's a perfectly valid matana when you do it stam. You don't have to explicitly say that your matana, the shtar matana, should be written in a public way. Rav Ashi amar cheshinan. Rav Ashi says we are choshesh that it might be matanta tmirta. Now the lashon cheshinan suggests not that we know for sure it's matanta tmirta, but that we're choshesh it might be matanta tmirta, and that's what the Rashbam points out. Rashbam writes cheshinan. L'tmirta v'lo magvinan ba, and therefore you can't collect with this shtar, but v'magvinan lo madrinan uvda. If a Beis Din allowed someone, let's say you wrote a matanta tmirta to Reuven, you wrote a stam matana to Reuven without explicitly saying it should be done publicly, and Reuven somehow was able to collect the property, he was able to take it, so you can't take it back from him because we're not sure that the matana that shtar is invalid. We're not sure if it's written stam. We're choshesh that it's invalid, and therefore we wouldn't give it to Reuven lechatchila. But if Reuven already got it, we're not going to take it back from him. V'hainu d'lo kam ravashi d'lo magvinan el cheshinan d'safeku v'echad d'kayma aratekum, and that's why he doesn't paskin directly that lo magvinan, that you cannot collect with it. Rather, he just says cheshinan, we're choshesh that it might be possible, and misafik, you'd have to return it. So wherever the land is right now is where it's going to stay. V'hilchas cheshinan and lahalacha, we are choshesh that it's possible, and therefore you should avoid giving someone a matana where you tell the edim to write the shtar stam. That should be avoided. The Rashbam adds, v'hilchach tzarich lichtov b'toch hashtar, you always have to include in the lashon hashtar, you always have to include in the lashon of the shtar that the person who's giving this matana had asked us to write this in the shuk and to sign it publicly in the outside. The afagav de lo amar, even if he never actually asked for it, ela kasvua lo stam shtar matana, kamo shetiknu chamuka amar. Meaning when he says write a shtar matana, we assume that means write a shtar matana the way it's a valid Shtar Matana. He's not a lawyer. He doesn't know what all the legalese is that has to be written into the document. So he doesn't know what needs to be written there. So he says, write a Shtar Matana. The Edim would then write up the Shtar Matana, have to make sure that the legal language is all taken care of. They have to cross the T's, dot the I's, make sure everything's taken care of. And included in that is saying that it was meant to be done publicly. Because if their estimation is that the guy is sincere about really giving a Shtar Matana, so he wants it done publicly. We have the assumption he wants it done in a valid way, which means to have it done publicly. Fine, period. New sugya now. Says the Mishnah. Well, it's the same sugya we've been doing the whole parak, which of course is Cheskas Gimel Shanim. But we've discussed many times that there are two components to a chazaka. It's not enough to have lived there for 3 years. You also need some sort of claim as to why it was okay for you to be living there for the last 3 years. You need some sort of taina. So this is the Mishnah that tells us that you need a taina. Kol chazaka sheinim a taina, ein a chazaka. Anytime you have a chazaka where there's no taina accompanying your chazaka, such a chazaka is invalid. Ketzad. So what's such an example of the chazaka she'eni mataina? So Amar lo mata also b'toch shali. Reuven comes to Shimon and says, "What are you doing in my house?" V'amar lo shalom li adam davar me'olam. And Shimon says, "Well, I've been living here for 3 years, and no one ever told me not to live here. So that's why I'm here." Ain't a chazaka. That's not a chazaka. Shimon doesn't get to keep the house because he has no taina as to why it's okay for him to be there. He's just saying that no one ever stopped him. But shemachartali shenasatali b'matana avicha machrali avicha nasli b'matana harezu chazaka. If he says, "What am I doing here? You sold it to me, or you gave it to me as a matana, or your father sold it to me, or your father gave it to me as a matana," that's a real taina. That's a legitimate taina, and that is a chazaka. Reuben asks Shimon, "What do you do in my house?" And Shimon says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I yarshin this house for my father." Then Shimon doesn't need to explain how his father legally owned it. It's not necessary to prove that, because who's Shimon to know about his father's dealings? He just knows that when his father died, he got this house from his father. Now, the Gemara is going to say that he does need to prove that his father at least lived there for a day, just to know that he actually did get it from his father, but he's not going to have to prove that his father was legally there. That's the concept that we have of Ta'anin and Liyarshim, that since Yarshim aren't going to know to make their own Tainas, because what do they know about their father's properties? So we make a Taina on their behalf. And we're going to say on his behalf, yeah, his father bought it from you, so you gave it to his father as a gift, something like that. We'll make a Taina on their behalf. If you look at Tosa, Shalom Li Adam Davar Me'olam, Vuadin Dafilu Im Amar Zavinte Miploni Dezavni Minach, Dolavi Chazaka, Ad Shiyomar Atomachartali Kedukhtani Seifa. Not only is saying, "No one ever told me anything," not a Taina, but even if you say, "I bought it from somebody who had purchased it from you," that's also not a Taina, because you have no first-hand knowledge that the person you bought it from was the real owner. So why doesn't the Mishnah give that case? Isn't that a bigger chiddush? That not only when you say, "I don't know," right? That's of course not a taina. Why doesn't the Mishnah give a bigger chiddush? You could say, "I know! I bought it from Plony and he bought it from you." Even that's not a taina, because you have no idea if Plony really bought it from the original owner. Why doesn't the Mishnah say it? So says Tosos Elaha Difalei Lemintkat Shalom Li Adam Davar Me'olam Lashmin Dlavi Psach Pricha Leile Kedamar B'Gemara. It's an additional chiddush when you say Lo Amar Adam Davar Me'olam, because you might have thought that since he's not really saying anything, that we would say Psach Pricha Leile, that we would make a taina on his behalf if the guy is not really saying anything. So I might have thought it's better to keep your mouth shut than to say, "Yeah, I got it from Plony. He got it from you." When you say, "I got it from Plony, I got it from you," you're admitting that you have no idea how this property really belongs to you. Because you don't know how Plony really, if Plony that you bought it from is really the owner. But when you say, "No one ever said anything to me," so you're not really saying anything. Then maybe we would speak on your behalf. Then there's a havamin at least to say, we might speak up on your behalf and explain how really it does belong to you. So that's the havamina. That's why we dafka give the case of Lo Amar Li Adam Davar Me'olam. Now, what if, this is true by Cheskas Karkos, that you need a Chazaka Sheyeshi Mataina. What about Cheskas Tashmishin? What about a chazaka of using someone's property, not chazaka of ownership? I have a chazaka that my gutters can drain out into my neighbor's property. So when does that become a chazaka? Do you need a taina with that also? Do I need to say he sold me the right, or can I just say, well, I've been doing this, and therefore I'm allowed to? So says Rashbam, bein becheskas gemul shanim dekarkos ubatim vilanos, bein becheskas yomechad kegon hanach damrin la'el, achzik luhur divichulei. That was the sugi, if you remember, that Vavam and Aleph, about Cheskas Tashmishin. And Rashbam says, you do not require a taina when it comes to Cheskas Tashmishin. Right? That was Rashi on Vavam and Aleph said that all those chazakos don't require Gimel Shanim, but he says, B'shah Achas, and the guy is Shosek, it is a good chazaka, because we assume a person would not just let you do whatever you want in his property and not say anything. But, he says, you do need a taina. You do need to say macharli nasanli b'matana. So the Rashbam agrees with Rashi over there. Now, not everyone agrees with it. Tosos and Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, Dibra Maskel Vaha didn't agree with that analysis. Right? If you recall, Tosos and Daf Chav Gimel had said Dibra Maskel Vaha Pirush Rivam. You don't even need a taina in those cases. Cheskas Tashmishin does not require a taina. So that's Machlokas Rishon about Cheskas Tashmishin. What about Chazakan Metaltalin? What if someone says, hey, what are you doing with my watch? So can I just say, no one ever said anything to me, and I have it, it's in my hands, and no one ever stopped me. So is that okay, or do I need to make a taina on Metaltalin? So this also is a Machlokas. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that Cheskas Metaltalin does not require a taina. You don't have to say anything. You just sit there quietly and you just shrug, and it's yours because you're the one that's holding on to it right now. Because once it leaves the reshus of the person who owned it previously, it's now completely in your chazaka, whoever's holding on to it. You don't have to say, we don't assume that a person's a ganav unless we have some reason to believe that he's a ganav. This guy has a watch on his wrist. Who's to say that he's a ganav? Not everyone with a watch on the wrist is a ganav. So we're not going to make that assumption. However, even according to Rabbeinu Yonah, what you have to say is that's if the when you ask the guy, what are you doing, he just shrugs. And, you know, he just ignores you. But if you ask the guy, what are you doing with my watch? And he says, well, I took it from you, and you didn't say anything, and no one said anything. No one stopped me from taking it. So that's for sure not good, because then he's being motivated, he's a god, right? So that's for sure no good. I mean, even Rabbi Yonah would say that's no good. But if he doesn't say anything, that's the shayla. If he just doesn't have a taina, he just walks away. Is he chayv to give a taina, or can he just ignore you? Because leave me alone. I have the watch on my wrist now. It's not your problem. Now, the Ktsos disagrees with Rabbi Yonah. Ktsos says even metaltalin does require a taina. And the Sivis also says like the Ktsos, that it does require a taina by metaltalin. There are rayas from Rishonim that way. It's not just Rishon against the Achronim. In the Biurei Adaf, he quotes an interesting raya against Rabbeinu Yonah from Gemara Ksubas Daf Pehei. The Gemara Ksubas says that someone gave pearls to Rav Miasha as a pikadon, and then Rav Miasha died, and he never said anything about the pearls, who they belong to, and where they're supposed to go. So his Yorshim figured that they're going to be able to keep them. And then the guy who gave it as a pikadon, or claimed to have given it as a pikadon, came, and he said, I want my pearls back. So the Gemara over there says that they have to give the pearls back to this guy, first of all, because Rav Miasha was not a rich man, so it's unlikely that these were his. And second, because the guy who came had a simon, was able to give a simon on them, so he definitely owned them at one time. So with the combination of those two reasons, the Gemara says that the Yorshim had to give it back. And now in Tosus over there, Rabbi Kiriego over there, it's clear that there were both reasons were necessary, because just to say that he wasn't a rich man would not be enough, because maybe he was rich and we just didn't know about it. Some people are just very understated and don't go around flashing their money all over the place. But by the fact that the mafkid gave a simon, so we know that it didn't really belong to Rav Miasha. But the regarding the issue of not to make a taina that it was a lekuach liyarshim, so that's where the svar that he wasn't a rich man helps. So now, so what are we saying? Why do we not say Tainin and Liyarshim over there? Because Rav Miasha was not a rich man, so it's lo shchiach to make such a taina that this really belonged to him, that lekuach, that Rav Miasha bought it. Because after all, how would he ever buy these pearls? He wasn't a rich man. But why do you need a taina? It's metaltalin. Why would you? I mean, we're saying if Rav Miesha were around and he were to taina l'kuachu biyadi, for sure he would be believed, right? But we're not going to make that taina for Yarshim because it's a very unlikely taina because he was a poor man, he wasn't a rich man. But why do you need a taina at all? He shouldn't need a taina if it's cheskos metaltelin. So elamai, you see, that's a raya against the Rabbeinu Yonah. Right, Rabbeinu Yonah holds that you don't need a taina for metaltelin. There's a raya for the ketos, a raya for the nesivus, that you taka do need a taina when it comes to metaltelin as well. Okay, that's the raya. Says the Gemara Vayter. Says Gemara Pshita. What's the whole chiddush of our Mishnah that if you just say I have this property because no one ever stopped me, that's not a good chazaka. So says Gemara, of course it's not a good chazaka. What? Is it really such a big chiddush to say chazaka requires taina along with it? Why isn't that obvious? So says Gemara, no, mal detema. I might have thought, hi gavra mizvan zavnale, hi ara, that really this guy had purchased this land, and vishtara havalei v'irkas, and he had a shtar and he had lost the shtar. Now really, he's been living here for 3 years. If he would have known the halacha, so he could have just told us that, and it would have been fine. He could have said, I bought this land, I had a shtar, I lost it, and we'd be okay with that, because you're allowed to lose a shtar after 3 years. But he didn't know that. He thought that if he comes and says that he had a shtar, and he lost it, they're going to accuse him of all sorts of things. The reason he said, well, no one said anything to me, because Savar, he thought to himself, if I say that I bought this land, they're right away going to tell me, oh yeah, where's your shtar? And says Tosos, filling in the blanks, and when I'm unable to produce a shtar because I lost it, they're going to say that I stole it. But if I just say no one ever said anything to me, they're not going to say I stole it. You figure this is a better time if I say that no one ever said anything to me, because when I'm saying no one ever said anything to me, I'm saying this guy saw that I was there and he must have allowed me to be there. He was mochel me, and that's like a matana. He gave it to me as a matana because he was mochel the whole time that I was there. So that's my taina. So hilkach lemelei anan dilma shtara havali v'irkas. So I might have had a havamina, since it's possible that that's what's going through this guy's brain when he says lo amali adam davar me'olam, since it's possible that really he did buy it and he lost the shtar, he's just afraid to tell that to us. I might have had a havamina that we should say that on his behalf. That on his behalf, we should say, maybe he bought it and he had the shtar and he lost it. I might have had a havamina that in that case we should say, good, so that's what Bezin's here for. We're here to speak on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves or who don't know how to speak for themselves because he doesn't know what the proper taina to make is. Therefore, the Mishnah comes and tells me, no, that if the guy makes such a taina, that we don't make a taina on his behalf. Why not? So if you look at Rashbam, if he makes the taina, wonderful. If he doesn't make this taina, we're not going to do it for him. Says Rashbam, what you see is an interesting chiddush. If the guy first says, and then we say, sorry, that's not going to work for you. And then he says, no, I mean, when I say, no one ever stopped me, what I really mean to say is that I bought this land and I since lost the shtar. So normally we have a halacha that toin in chazav toin. You know, you can't go and just change your story midway through. So says Rashbam, what you see from here is from the fact that we say, look, if he wants to make the taina, he can make the taina. We're not going to do it for him. At what stage is that? That's saying even after he said lo amar li adam davar me'olam, still we leave it open to him to be able to make that taina. It's not called being chazav toin, meaning. The Gemara says, I might have had a havamina that the guy's only saying lo amar li adam davar me'olam because he's afraid to say that he lost the shtar, even though that's really the truth. Kamash malan, what? So there are two ways to read it. One way to read it is kamash malan, that no one ever thinks that way, and he'll tell us the real story at first, and when he says lo amar li adam davar me'olam, it's totally invalid, we throw him out of court. That's the way I would have read it. The Rashbam is saying, no, kamash malan, that if that's what's going through his mind, when we put a little fire to him, and when we press him a little bit, he better start explaining that that's what was going through his mind. We're not going to explain for him that that must have been going through his mind. He has to explain that himself, but if he does explain that himself, then it's fine. Then it's good. that because the halacha is, even though you're not allowed to be toin b'chazer b'toin, if you said something vague, you're allowed to clarify a vague statement that you made previously. Salam al yadam davar me'olam is vague. It's not saying that I didn't buy it. It's just saying, no one ever stopped me yet. And that leaves room to explain what you meant by that. Why did no one stop me? Probably because I bought it, and I had a shtar, and I lost the shtar, and that's okay. That's just an explanation of what you had previously said. Okay, says Gemara Vaiter. Stories about Chazak Sheni Taina. Anav is the simon for Rav Anan, Rav Kahana. Rav Anan and Bidka. Bidka is the topic of discussion in the story. So anyway, says the Gemara. Rav Anan shakal Bidka ba'ari. Rav Anan had a flood that flooded his field, and it had totally wiped away the boundary marker on the field, so we couldn't tell where the fence was, where the border of his field and his neighbor's field was. So Azal had the good debari dechaver. He went and he rebuilt the fence, but he accidentally rebuilt it in the wrong place, being a little too generous to himself. Meaning he gave himself some of his friend's property, put the fence somewhere inside his neighbor's property. Asal kameid Rav Nachman, so they went to Rav Nachman for a din Torah. Amalei zil hader, so Rav Nachman told Rav Anan, give back the property. So v'hachzikli, he said, what do you mean? I have a chazak on the property. It's been 3 years already that I'm muchzik in this property. So why should I have to give it back? Now, what's that taina of v'hachzikli? So the Rashbam understands, but when he says v'hachzikli, that I have a chazak on it, if you look at Tosfos, he quotes both that. He said v'hachzikli pirusha kuntrus banisi koslal piv usiyeli. That at this point he's already tainaing, the other guy helped me build the wall here, so obviously he was okay with it. V'kivin shem mitzvaso asa have a chazak hashiyesh mataina. So since I did it with his blessing, so it's chazak hashiyesh mataina. But says Tosfos v'kasha, when you become a basrach v'achil, mashma dar hashta lav v'machzik ba mitamachila. But it doesn't sound that way because later the Gemara is going to suggest that. It sounds like up until this point he's not saying anything about what the other guy's das was yet. And also right away Rav Nachman should have just said, no, the reason the guy was helping was because he didn't realize where the border was either. You both made a mistake. Why does he wait on that time? We're going to see he's going to say that to him eventually, but not yet. So v'nir lefarish Rav Anan have a ta'in shalakach menav lohay loedim shalakha. No, Rav Anan was actually claiming that he had purchased it. He just had no edim that he had purchased it. V'yirot zaliyos neman mitoros chazaka, and he wanted to be believed with a chazaka. V'chiyam le Rav Nachman delav chazaka li, delav chazaki. Then when Rav Nachman told him, sorry, it's not a good chazaka, that's when Rav Anan comes and says, yeah, but even if it's not a good chazaka, he helped me, so he was mochel me, he was giving it to me, so that's how the story must play out. So let's read the Gemara like Tosfos reads it. V'achzikili, I bought it from him, and therefore I have a chazaka on it. So I'm like, come on, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel, Damri, called the fun of the altar, Rabbi Chazaka. You don't have a chazaka on it, you weren't there for 3 years. The Din Torah was the next day. Who do you think you're holding like? You think we hold like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, who holds that a chazaka is even for a day, and the only reason we require 3 years is for travel time? In case the Marakama is very far away, is a year's distance away from the land. Let's not assume that way. Let's assume, right, me and Rabbi Yehuda would hold that if it was Befanav, it would be Chazaka right away. We don't assume that, and Rabbi Shmuel is going to say it later on in the parak, but we don't assume that way. We don't assume a Chazaka is immediate. Chazaka takes 3 years. Sorry, you don't have a Chazaka. So Rav Anan saw that time it didn't work, so he went with the next one. Amar Lei V'ha'achil Dasa V'siya B'guda Badai. I know he was Mochel me because he helped me build the fence. If the neighbor helped me build the fence, obviously he was okay with the placement of the fence. Amalei Mechila Batalasi, he says, no. Yeah, he helped you build the fence. That's because he didn't know where the fence was supposed to go either. It was a mistake. Had he known that he was building the fence in on his own property, he never would have helped you. Now, you yourself, if you would have known where you were building it, you never would have done it. You weren't trying to steal his land. It wasn't a land grab for you. So just like you didn't know where you are, he didn't know where he was. The flood came, wiped out every remnant. Everything is all confused. Everything. No one knew exactly what they were doing. So he helped you build the fence, but that's not a right. That he was really mochel. He made a mistake, just like you made a mistake. Says in the Gemara, next story, similar story. Rav Kahana shakal bitkabare. Again, Rav Kahana had a flood that wiped away the border of his field. Azal hadu gudabari delo didei. So he went and he built a fence on land that was not his, meaning he went and built it within his neighbor's property. Azal kamed Rav Yehuda, they went to Rav Yehuda. Azal aisi trei sahadi. And the neighbor brought two witnesses as to how far in on his own land Rav Kahana, was it Rav Kahana? Yeah, Rav Kahana had built this fence. So what did the two witnesses say? One witness said that he went two rows into the neighbor's yard. And the other one said he went three rows into the neighbor's yard. So he for sure built into the neighbor's property according to both witnesses. It's just a question of how far. So Amalei, so when they went to Rav Yehuda for Psak Halacha, Rav Yehuda said, Zil Shalom Tartim Yigot Tlas. At the very least, you need to give him back two rows, right? Because that for sure, according to both witnesses, you at least took away that much from him. So at the very least, you need to give that back. So Amalei, come on, Reb Shimon Elazar, who are you assuming like that? That's okay. You're assuming that you can accept such edus. You must be assuming like Reb Shimon ben Elazar, and he's ultimately going to say we don't pass like Reb Shimon ben Elazar. But first, we're going to show where Reb Shimon ben Elazar holds that such edus is kosher. Why would the edus not be kosher? So again, you have two witnesses. One guy says you went two rows in, the other one says you went three rows in. It's edus mecheshes. The two witnesses don't have their story straight. Normally, when two witnesses can't get their story straight, we don't accept them. They're contradictory witnesses, and we throw them out of court. So says Rav Kahana, by accepting the two witnesses and saying that, yeah, they both say I owe at least two rows, by saying that, you're assuming you're locking yourself into the sheet of Rav Shimon Elazar, and we don't pass them like the sheet of Rav Shimon Elazar. To Tanya, because we have a braisa, what did Rav Shimon Elazar say? I'm Rav Shimon Elazar, lo nachlu b'sham v'esal al shtei kitei edem shachas omeres mana havachas omeres masayim, sheish b'chal masayim mana. Pashup shat, we have a Mishnah Maseches Nazir that has a machlokas. If one set of witnesses says you owe 200 and the other set of witnesses says you owe 100, that Beis Hillel would say you at least have to pay 100, and Beis Shammai would say no, you don't have to pay anything because the two witnesses are contradicting each other, and therefore we throw both sets out of court. Right? Pashup shat, that's the machlokas. Rabbi Shimon Elazar comes and reframes the machlokas for us. And he says, no, if there are two sets of witnesses, two sets, meaning two witnesses that say 200 and two witnesses that say 100, then everyone would say that you would pay at least 100 because yesh b'chal masayim mana. Al man nechluku, you know where the machlokas b'sham b'shilu is? Al kas achas, it's when you have one set of witnesses. Shechrom or mana vechrom or masayim, one set of witnesses, one guy says you owe 100, the other one says you owe 200. Shebeshame yomrim nechluka edusan. Beshame says in that case that they're contradicting each other, and therefore it's an invalid set of witnesses. We don't listen to anything they say. Ubeis Hillel omrim, says Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, in that case, Beis Hillel is going to say, yesh b'chal masayim mana, that it's considered as if you have two witnesses that you owe 100, and therefore you're going to have to pay $100. So that's where Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the way he understands Beis Hillel, is that even when it's two witnesses that contradict each other, but there's a yesh b'chal masayim mana svara, we're going to go with yesh b'chal masayim mana. So Amar Leiv, amasin alach yigati ma'arava, de'ein alach Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So says Rav Kahana to Rav Yehuda, how could you pass like Rav Shimon Elazar and make me pay back two rows of the field? I could bring you a letter from Eretz Yisrael that says that all the poskim in Eretz Yisrael say that we don't say like Rav Shimon Elazar, that Rav Shimon Elazar's understanding of the machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is flawed, and that really both Beis Shammai Beis Hillel would agree that if it's a single set of witnesses where one witness says 200 and one witness says 100, that even Beis Hillel would agree you throw him out of court. I'll bring you a letter. Amar Leih L'chitesi. So he said, okay, bring me a letter. When you bring me the letter, then we could talk. Until now, you're just talking about that you could bring me a letter. So, it's all talk until you show me something. Fine. Says Maravaiter. Who gavra the darba kashta be Elisa Arba Shani? A guy lived in a place called Kashta in a top floor apartment for 4 years. Then the owner of the house came and he found this guy living in his attic. He goes upstairs to the attic and he sees a guy living there. I'm like, my base. He says, what are you doing in this house? What are you doing in the attic? I'm like, Plani Zvinta Zavna Minach. He says, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I bought it from Plony and he bought it from you. Or at least that's what he told me. Right? He told me he had purchased it from you. Asil Kamej Rabbi Chia, Amalei. So he went to Rabbi Chia, and Rabbi Chia says, I islach sa'adi didar ba'iyu de zavanta minei. If you have witnesses that the guy that you bought it from lived there, va'afilu chad yoma, even if all you could prove is that he lived there for a single day, ukimna la biyadcha, then fine, then you'll get to keep it. But if you do not have witnesses that saw that the guy that you bought it from at least lived there for one day, then you don't get to keep it at all, right? But if witnesses for one day is good enough, right? That would be ukim la biyadcha. Why? Says Rashbam, afilu chad yoma, kidei la'amis tvarecha v'ukma biyadcha, hol v'chzakta shnei chazaka, v'shuv lo tzarech laviyedim shalach l'mibay levosu shemach v'lach. You would then not need to prove that the guy that you bought it from had purchased it from the original owner. Mishum detoanin liyoresh, detoanin lilokeach. Just like we make a tain on behalf of a yoresh, we make a tain on behalf of a lokeach. All you need to prove is that someone lived there for a day. You don't need to prove anymore. We make that taina on your behalf. Amar Rav, so Rav says, I was sitting in front of Rabbi Chia, and I said to him, why should he even have to prove that the guy he bought it from was living there for a day? Don't people buy and sell real estate without ever moving in all the time? They invest in it and then they'll just flip it. If I know that I have a buyer for this real estate for $10 million and I know that I can get it for $5 million, I'm not going to wait to sell it. I'll buy it right away and I'll flip it immediately. So isn't it possible that the guy flipped it at night, in a single night, without ever having moved into the property? So why should you have to prove that the guy even lived there for a single day? The Chazisei L'daitis, so that's what Rav said to his uncle. That's what he said to Rav Chia. Why should he even have to prove it? But his uncle didn't agree with him. V'chazisei l'daite, he says, I was able to tell that what he held, what Rabbi Chia held, was that yamrle kamay didi zavne minach mehemen. If the person that's living there said that the person I bought it from you, and I saw him buy it from you, then he'd be believed. Migo di bayamrle anaz vinto minach. Migo, that he could have said that I bought it from you directly. The Achronim point out, you don't really need a migo over here, meaning, if he says, I saw the guy that I bought it from you, that itself is a taina, right? That, and he has a chazaka, he's been living there for 3 years, so it's a chazaka sheishim a taina. He doesn't need a migo that I could have said I bought it from you. The lashon of migo is a little bit unusual in this Gemara. It seems a little bit strange in this Gemara. It's just saying that just as he would be believed to come with the taina that he bought it, it's also a taina to say that the person I bought it from you. Wait, it's Thursday. I'm sorry, I totally forgot. Okay.
Split the difference because there's no one time.
Yeah. All right. We'll stop there. Oh, sorry, I totally forgot. You could have given me the sign. I want